We're going to learn at least most of a sicha, of a talk of the Rebbe, that the truth is that the Rebbe never said this all in one place at one time. If you see at the back of the sicha, it says over here that the Rebbe shared these ideas in 1982 and 1980. So that means that there was a group of people that actually gathered these ideas, ordered the ideas, put notes, and they presented it to the Rebbe. And the Rebbe corrected, put more notes, less notes, whatever, changed things. And that's what got out printed in the name of the Rebbe. What's the subject of what we're going to learn? The subject is an interaction between Laban and Yaakov in Parshas Vayetze, that Laban received, he was his father-in-law, received an amazing blessing from Yaakov. Bracha, blessing. And the Zohar argues what was this blessing exactly about. And from the two perspectives we find in the Zohar about this blessing, the Rebbe develops a whole idea about what's the importance of a woman in her help to her husband in having children, because really the mitzvah, the obligation of having children, is for the husband, not for the woman. But of course, without a woman you can't have a child. So what's the importance? What do they gain, so to speak, in the women in participating? And then the Rebbe is going to talk about non-Jews. Basically, what do they gain by keeping their mitzvahs, their commandments, and helping Jews keeping their commandments? Do they gain anything? Are they part of this whole mitzvah thing or not? That's the development. And then the Rebbe is going to go back again to Laban and Yaakov explaining the blessings. Let's go. In relation to the blessing that there was in the tzon, the sheep of Laban, because of Yaakov, the Torah says clearly that Laban got lots new sheep from having given the sheep to Yaakov. So we find two opinions in the Zohar. What was the blessing that Laban received from Yaakov exactly? The first opinion is, I'll read it in Aramaic of the Zohar, and then I'll translate. Eshkach begine de Yaakov mea an kol yarcho. Laban found, because of Yaakov, 100 sheep every month. It's like a lot. And then 100 goats and 100 this and that. Okay, so Laban got an amazing blessing from Yaakov of 100 animals each month. That's opinion number one. Opinion number two is Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba says, no, it's 1,000. The same thing, but 1,000. 1,000 sheep, 1,000 goats, and 1,000, and so on. Each month, which is really a lot. Really, really a lot. And Rabbi Abba brings a proof. What's the proof that that Yaakov, so to speak, generated in Laban an amazing blessing? It's a verse in Parshas Vayetze. Vayivarech Hashem oischa l'ragli, that says, Laban to Yaakov, God blessed me because of you. And we know that every blessing that comes from up, from above, it's 1,000. That number is 1,000. At the end of the whole Sikha, the Rebbe is going to explain these two numbers, 100, 1,000, what they mean, and so on. So, we do see that there are two opinions of what the blessing was. 100 or the 1,000, or 1,000. We can understand, it's understandable, that even according to the first opinion, that Laban got a blessing from God, even Laban said, "Vayivarcheni Hashem biglalecha," God blessed me because of you. So everybody agrees that blessing comes from God. The question over here is, what's the way, the type, the mode that this blessing came? Either in 100s or in 1,000s. The Rebbe brings that the truth is that everybody agrees that there's a rule. And the rule is that all the blessings that come from above, they are in the number 1,000. That's the way the blessing comes up. So, however, we do find an opinion that says that the blessing came in a way of 100. That opinion also agrees that the blessings from God come in 1,000. So why in this case was 100? Because this blessing in general, blessing can be brought down in two ways. Way number one is a projection in a way that comes down, and it's you can see it clearly. That is a blessing that comes from above. In that case, blessing comes down in a way of 1,000. So again, you can realize, you see it with your eyes, that this blessing is a godly blessing, 1,000. Whatever that means, 1,000. The second way blessing can come down is in a way that down here in this material world, we do not realize that this is a blessing from God. Everything comes from God, but we don't see it as a blessing from God. What do you see? 100. So these are the two ways that this blessing comes down, so to speak. In a way that you can see it's a godly blessing, 1,000. That's what it means, whatever 1,000 is. At the end, we'll see. Or in a way you don't see it as a godly blessing, it's just, you know, the ways of nature, that comes down in a way of 100. Now, we have to understand, what makes the difference? What makes the difference? In both cases, 100 and 1,000, it's a godly blessing. And Laban agrees to that, and he says it to Yaakov. Why is there a difference? Why is there a difference between 100 and 1,000? What's the difference? Okay, then we ask other questions. So we're going to jump to point number two. The explanation is like this. It is known, what's the concept of a blessing, of a bracha? What's a bracha in general? Bracha comes from the word mavrich. Mavrich, I don't have the word in English. I don't know if I have it in Spanish either, but the word is when you put down, you bring down the vine into the earth again. You make a small cut in the vine and you put it under the earth and it sprouts a new tree, a new vine tree. That's called mavrich in Hebrew. That means you bring down something. You're projecting from above to down something new, so to speak, or something, whatever, from its source. That's what a bracha actually means. Bring down something from its source. That means, what's the emphasis from its source? That means that there's a source, there's a place where the bracha, where the blessings actually come down from, and they just materialize down here. But they are up there, whatever, spiritually speaking, and they materialize down here in a certain particular way, each person according to its level. You will see blessings on your level, I will see blessings in my level, and so on. And the blessings are over there, spiritually speaking, in their source. And this is basically the content of the difference between these two explanations, 100, 1,000. What's really the source of the blessing? According to the first opinion that says that the blessing of Laban was 100, why? Because the blessing came from the source of Laban, from his source himself, and it was brought down because of the merit of Yaakov working with the sheep of Laban. But the truth is that the blessing came from Laban himself. It was his own blessing that Yaakov just brought it down, materialized it. And that's why, as we're going to learn later, that's why it's in the number of 100. The completeness, so to speak, to which Laban can actually reach is only 100, as we will explain later, which is not the case with Rabbi Abba, which is the second explanation. The blessing was brought down by Yaakov. It was Yaakov's blessing. It wasn't Laban's blessing, it was Yaakov's blessing. Because he was there working with Laban and so on. And Yaakov brought down from his own source, which is connected to the number 1,000, as we will explain later, not now. And that's the difference between these two. What are they arguing in the Zohar? Where did the blessing come from Laban or from Yaakov? That's the difference between the numbers. According to this, we will understand the different languages they use over there in the Zohar. I'm not going to go into the details, because it's not really relevant exactly right now. So the Rebbe explains what the Zohar says, which the first opinion says, the Rabbi Abba says, 100, 1,000 from Laban, from Yaakov. In order to understand, number three, in order to understand this clearer, we first have to understand that Laban was blessed because of Yaakov. And this is what actually happens by tzaddikim, by righteous people in general. Wherever they go, they bring blessing. In this case, Yaakov in the house of Laban. The world was created in a way that the Rebbe is over here quoting Rashi and the Midrash. Breishis, the word Breishis, it's a weird word without going into all the details. It's base Reishis for two main things. God created the heavens and the earth. What are these two main things? Reishis, that's what it means. The word Reishis, main, Bishvil HaTorah, Bishvil Israel, for the Torah and for the Jewish people. That's the reason why God created the world. And we will see later where the non-Jews come into the equation, so to speak. But that's the reason why God created the world. And because that's the objective of the whole creation, so you can understand that any object, anything in the world that serves and helps a Jew to fulfill this objective of creation, to bring down godliness and so on, those things reach their maximum level of existence through helping the Jew. Again, the whole creation was created for the Torah and the Jews, so when something external helps the Jews, that something external becomes part of the whole objective of the whole world. And that's the reason why every single place where the tzaddikim used to go, the righteous people used to go, there's bracha over there, there's blessing over there. Because that place, the Rebbe quotes it in quote unquote, that place becomes a place where the tzaddikim go and serve God. That's what the tzaddikim do. That's what the righteous people do, serve God. They work and they serve God and so on. So therefore, that place where they are, it helps, so to speak, this objective of the whole creation of the Jewish people serving God through the Torah. And that's why that place comes to its completeness and so on. Now, there's a discussion between our sages. This is a very technical discussion. I'll do it as fast as possible so we don't get caught with the craziness of the argument. There's something called a mitzvah. Okay, a mitzvah. You have to do something. Suppose you have to circumcise a child. Okay, there's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. Parshas Tazria, Yom HaShmini, Mol Besar Lase, in the eighth day you have to cut. Okay, very good. But then you can cut with your finger. You need a knife. Is the knife mitzvah or not? Is the knife part of the mitzvah or not? So there are two opinions. Everybody agrees that a knife is called, in Hebrew, machshirei mitzvah, something that helps you, prepares you to fulfill the mitzvah. But the knife itself is not a mitzvah, it's just a machshir, something that helps you keep the mitzvah. The question is, what's the importance of this machshir, of this thing that helps to keep the mitzvah? Is it as important as the mitzvah itself or not? That's the argument. And the Rebbe brings Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer says that machshir mitzvah, this thing that is used to fulfill actually a mitzvah, is as important as the mitzvah itself. Because without it, you would not be able to keep the mitzvah. It's impossible. You can't cut with your fingers and so on. So, machshir mitzvah is as important as the mitzvah. Which helps you to fulfill the mitzvah. However, other opinions in the Talmud do say that no, the machshir, that which prepares you and helps you and so on, is just the preparation. It's not the mitzvah itself. It doesn't have the same category as the mitzvah. No. And that has halachic implications, which actually don't really matter right now. And the Rebbe brings an example that sometimes there's a machshir, there's something that helps you keep the mitzvah, which everybody agrees is as important as the mitzvah. What's the case? The Rebbe brings the Ran. Rabbeinu Nissim Gerondi, he lived in France, Spain, 1300s. Huge sage. So important sage. Rabbeinu Nissim, Ran. That's how it's known. The Ran brings a very interesting idea. In Judaism, only, I know this will sound strange, but bear with me. Only men are obligated to have children, not women. Only men. However, of course, without a woman you can't have children and so on, etc. So the Ram brings the following very interesting idea. He says like this: even though a woman is not obligated to have children, according to the Torah and so on, however, she has a mitzvah. This is the word the Ram uses. She has a mitzvah, whatever that means, because she helps the husband to fulfill his mitzvah. So everybody agrees that it is his mitzvah to have children. But she, of course, is a huge, important thing in this thing. So she has also a mitzvah because she helps. Those two words, fundamental words in the words of the Ram. She has a mitzvah because she helps. Okay, what does that mean? You can say two ways of this. You can understand this idea of the Ram in two ways. Way number one, you say she has a mitzvah. Yeah, you know, something good. Something she earned some points up there in the heavens, whatever. That's one way of understanding it. And a second way of understanding it, no, wait a second. She is helping the husband to fulfill one particular mitzvah. Like, she's not helping the husband to, I don't know, to eat matzah in Pesach. Yeah, you have to eat this. She's putting it into their mouth. No. She's helping on something that he would not be able to do it alone. Just she's helping. And she's helping in something that is called a mitzvah rabba, a very important mitzvah to have children. So, therefore, she has a part as if, in this mitzvah of the husband, as if she also fulfilled up to a certain point the mitzvah. And she has a part of it. How much in percentage, I don't know, the Ram didn't say, the Rebbe doesn't say, I have no idea. But there's a huge difference between these two ways of understanding things. Because in the first way, you can say, yeah, okay, whatever, she did a good deed, something nice, she helped the husband. But she doesn't really have a part on the mitzvah. She doesn't actually take a piece of reward in the future to come and so on this mitzvah. No. She just did something nice, helped the husband. And the second way is, no. She has a mitzvah. She's part of the mitzvah itself, and a huge mitzvah. And the same thing you could say about this thing called machshire mitzvah, these things that prepare for the mitzvah. You can understand in the two ways also. You can understand that without this thing, for instance, the knife to cut, and so on, you would not be able to fulfill the mitzvah. So you could understand and say, okay, so like the first way the Rebbe brings in the words of the Ram, it's okay, it's an important knife. But if you don't have the knife, you're not able to, which is the subject over here, I jumped it, but the subject is, can you desecrate Shabbos to go find the knife? You can't carry the knife in the streets and so on without important, the details are not important right now, but you can't carry the knife in the street. You forgot the knife. The baby's over here and the knife is not here. Can I go take a knife? So if you're going to say that a machshir, which helps you to keep the mitzvah, is not important, it's just preparation, so you cannot get a knife. I'm sorry. Tomorrow. But if you're going to say that it's like very important part of the mitzvah, so you can go get a knife. You can go and get a knife. And this would be a difference between, basically, the Rebbe moves on in number 6. This would be the difference between a main thing and secondary thing. And this applies to the whole creation. Don't think this is just a knife, a discussion of a knife and a circumcision or the woman helping the husband having children. No. This goes on to the whole creation. What's the point? What's the idea? The Rebbe says like this. Either you the two words used by the Rebbe either you prepare for a mitzvah, which is not such an important thing, or you help the mitzvah, which is an important thing. When you prepare, you don't share the reward. When you help, you share the reward. Okay, so the Rebbe brings like this. What about the whole creation? Whole creation, the whole world, animals and people and things and every single thing in the world. We said that the world was created for the Jewish people to fulfill the Torah down here. What's the importance of the rest of the creation? What is it there for? Is it just a machshir? It's just preparing for the Jews to keep the mitzvahs? Or is it siyua? They're helping. That's the discussion over here, the argument over here. And that's how the Rebbe applies it to everything else in the world. You could say like this. It depends on how you look at the creation. If you look at the creation, that the creation is a thing by itself, but its thing, its theme, its reason why it exists is an intermediary and a preparation for the Jews to fulfill the Torah in the world and so on, then you're going to have to say that the creation itself has no relationship with the Torah and the Jewish people. It's like a secondary thing. It's just a preparation. In itself, has no importance at all. But if you look at the creation in a different way, if you say that the creation, its whole reason of being is for the Jews to keep the Torah down here and so on, it is as if the creation is a detail, it's a part of the Jews and the Torah. It's the second way of understanding things. Help, like the woman helping the husband. Not the woman preparing, so to speak, the husband to have children. Okay, very nice. But you don't share. No. She's a part of it. She's helping in a way that the whole world, so to speak, and it means all the objects, everything in the world, helps, that's the key word, helps the Jewish people to fulfill their purpose of being and so on. Then the Rebbe, in number 7, this is a tough one. We're not going to read the whole thing, but at least to have an idea. Then the Rebbe, number 7, brings this same argument. How do you look at non-Jews in the world? What about non-Jews? The argument the Rebbe brings over here, it's an argument between the Rambam and the Raivad. The Rambam, Spain, 1000, the Raivad lived a few years later, and he wrote very harsh notes on the Rambam. Usually argues with him very hardly. This guy is an ignorant, he doesn't know anything. Very hard words. And over here they're arguing, what happens if a non-Jew slaughters an animal? What happens if a non-Jew slaughters an animal? Is it good to be eaten by a Jew or not? Everybody agrees that a Jew cannot eat an animal slaughtered by a non-Jew. Everybody agrees to that. The question is, what's the status of the animal? Does it bring tuma, impurity, to a Jew that touches the animal or not? That's the argument over here. And basically, the Rebbe explains that the Rambam holds that the non-Jews, they exist. They are something. They help, so to speak, in the creation, without entering into the words of the Rambam and the Raivad and so on, but they exist. And therefore, when they slaughter an animal, the animal becomes ritually impure, even though a Jew cannot eat it, but it becomes ritually impure because somebody slaughtered it. An existent human being, so to speak. The Raivad holds the other way around. No. Forget it. Non-Jews in halacha, in law, is it only a law, Jewish law thing? In law, they don't exist. They're not important in law, in Jewish law. And therefore, when a non-Jew slaughters an animal, it's not that he came a person and slaughtered an animal. No, the animal just died. The animal passed away, whatever. It doesn't really matter that somebody slaughtered the animal. According to this, that's the argument between the Rambam and the Raivad. It's just circumscribed, so to speak, to laws of purity and impurity. It's not really a practical thing. Everybody is impure today, so it doesn't make any difference. But the point over here is that Rebbe is explaining, how do you look at the non-Jews? Do you look at the non-Jews as an existent and important part of creation and as partners to the Jews in fulfilling their own purpose or not? The Rambam will tell you, yes, they're part of creation. They help you. Of course, there are those who don't help. Okay. But in general, the idea is they are there. Why do the non-Jews exist? If the whole creation was done by God for the Jews in the Torah, what about the non-Jews? Most of the people are non-Jews. So why did God create them? I don't understand. They have no purpose? The Rambam will tell you, wait a second, yes, there is a purpose and there are mitzvahs and so on that they can do. And the rabbi will tell you, yeah, you have a good question. I have no idea why they exist. I have no idea. That's what the rabbi would say. So the rabbi is going to explain this in a very practical way. And with this, the rabbi is going to explain also two texts in the Rambam himself. How do the non-Jews look at their laws? And afterwards, we're going to go with the hundreds and thousands, hopefully, next class.